Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast, episode 21. We have a very special podcast today that is part of a multimedia extravaganza with Grading on the Curve, the fan-sided network's minor league blog. Today, you'll hear from Dalton, Valerie, and Ken Pompey about how the family supported and facilitated Dalton's burgeoning professional baseball career with the Toronto Blue Jays organization. So sit back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen, and get your Blue Jays on. It's the Blue Jays From Away podcast. Welcome to this latest edition of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. We're here with the family of Dalton Pompey. We're here in beautiful, I think it's not even Toronto anymore at this point. It's like Vaughan, Concord, whatever they like to call it. And if you just want to introduce yourself and let the listeners hear who you are.
Valerie Pompey.
Ken Pompey.
Dalton Pompey.
And we're sitting here in a lovely Tim Hortons, so if the noise in the background is a little too off-putting, just remember it's a great bit of Canadiana. We wanted to talk more about how the families of players really figure into their lives as players. So first for Val and Ken, you know, when did you realize that Dalton had a gift for baseball, a gift for athletics, and what were you doing to encourage that early on?
Well, didn't realize that he had a gift for the game until he was about 10. We played when he was four or five, but just in, you know, tossing the ball, giving them soft toss. And then we played, and we started off in Vancouver. We were living in Vancouver at the time. So we then got on a house league team, and he was pretty good, but there was another boy that was a little bit better than Dalton. And then Dalton didn't start blossoming, like I said, until around seven, because that's when I hired the track coach. And when he was when he learned how to run, he showed more confidence. So when he played the game, he actually seemed that he was better at it. Yeah, so that's when I first realized that maybe there's something here, you know, but not major leagues, just competitive. There's someone who could compete with other good kids. And that's when we started off.
Now, were there any other sports that he was playing at the time or when he was young?
He played some basketball, but not soccer, yes, but nothing like baseball. Baseball was more our focus. The other sport was more to mix it up more than anything, to see if there was any skill there and maybe it's something that he might have liked to do. Yeah.
So I'll direct this question to Dalton. Did you know early on that baseball was your favorite sport? It was the sport that you enjoyed playing the most?
Yeah, I think when I was younger, it was really fun to play. You know, there was no pressure or anything. So, you know, I loved to go to the field, and I always loved to hit. So, and at a young age, my parents taught me how to switch hit. So that was always interesting. You know, I always felt like I was different than all the other kids because they only hit from one side, you know. So, I mean, going to the park every day was definitely fun. And, yeah, I mean, the other sports that I played when I was younger, I feel like they were all geared towards helping me towards baseball. But, I mean, I enjoyed playing them, but baseball was my love from the beginning. And I was introduced to it early on, and, you know, I just stayed with it, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Now, you mentioned that, you know, you started switch hitting from a very early age. And what age would you say that was?
Four.
Was it four?
Yeah.
Okay.
Three, four.
Yeah, it was four because we just moved to Vancouver.
Yeah.
And it was Valerie's idea for him to switch hit. You know, I'd never played baseball, so I had no experience with the game. She suggested, well, if we're going to get him into baseball, have him swing from his opposite side. Maybe you can explain, because
I actually read it in a magazine. He was gung-ho about baseball, so I thought, I'm going to read up on it because I don't know. And there was an article on switch hitting, and they had said that you should start from a young age and always start on their weaker side. So if they're right-handed, go left-handed. And so when he was interested, I got Ken to say, no, start him from his left. He was very, very good at it, switch hitting. The younger one, not so much.
So it wasn't a kind of social experiment to see what would happen. It was just, you know, this could make him a better baseball player, and let's get him started from the opposite side. And Dalton, which side would you say you're more comfortable with from now, like at this point?
I think it varies. You know, I go through these stretches where I feel like I'm better left-handed than right, or I'm better right-handed than left. I feel like it dictates how many pitchers I face. So if I go through a long stretch of facing a lot of left-handed pitchers, then I feel more comfortable right-handed. But I mean, there's not one side that I don't feel comfortable on, but I wouldn't say I feel comfortable from them all the time. So,
I mean, I find that really interesting because you don't hear of a lot of switch hitters who start that young, really. I mean, really, almost before they even start playing, it's a conscious effort. Well, if we're going to play, let's switch hit.
Yeah, that's how we pretty well started.
That's how we started. Yeah. Started right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. We started right. One side or the other. We didn't favor one. We did every at-bat, one side, then the next side, the left side, right side, when he was younger. It wasn't until he started elite ball that they wanted him to go on one side towards the pitcher. So he was used to hitting lefties on his right and on his left. So,
you know, at this point, he's maybe 7 or 8 years old, and was that when you brought in a track coach to work on the running? And was that still in Vancouver?
No, that was here. We were living here at the time. And we hired Coach Val Gross. we call him Coach Val. And at York University, what I did was I went out to York and I just observed the coaches and how they interacted with their athletes. And this coach stood out more than any other coach. And then I asked him if he would work with myself and my son. And he said, no, go over there to those guys. He works with the older kids. So he turned to me and I said, no, I don't want them. I want you. And it wasn't until my third request, then he said, well, let me see him. And that's when we started the relationship.
For you, Dalton, what's it like? I mean, you're 7 or 8 years old and you've been playing baseball. You enjoy it. And your dad says, Let's run track. Let's learn how to train to really run. What was your reaction to that, if you can remember it?
It was interesting. You know, I didn't really know how to run properly, so I was open to the idea. But slowly, as I started to, you know, compete a little bit, because I started to compete and, you know, to help me with baseball. So, you know, that competitive edge against running against other people is only going to help you. So, I didn't really like that as much. I was kind of more about just training for baseball and seeing towards that, because I was getting beat, you know? Like, I wasn't winning because these other kids were training for track. So, but now that I look back and I understand that's what they were doing and what I was doing was geared towards something else, you know, I'm okay with it now. But back then, I'd say it was interesting, and I actually enjoyed going there, you know, because he made it fun. There was older guys there that I could, you know, learn from, and they could mentor me, and it was like a family.
I find it really interesting because, you know, in my day, it was, you know, you go and play baseball and that's your training for baseball.
Yeah,
you know, you
yeah.
go out, you play. If you have a good coach, then you'll probably develop a little bit more. But there really wasn't the same kind of focus. And I think there is more these days with the private pitching lessons and the private hitting lessons and private track lessons.
Yeah, but that's what I did. I hired a coach who knew what he was doing to teach him how to run properly, rather than myself teach Dalton how to run properly. I hired a pitching coach to teach Dalton how to pitch properly. I hired a fielding coach to teach him how to field the ball properly, so that not only Dalton could learn how to do all this, but I could learn too. And then with the coaches, you work with them for an hour, 2 hours per session, and then we practice almost every day doing whatever we learned. And that's how we developed his skills. And, you know, we're now benefiting from all that training because he's now where he is. Yeah, so it worked for us.
Now, as Dalton was getting older and getting into the higher levels of baseball in terms of more competitiveness for the youth baseball, you know, from the family's point of view, was it, you know, were you structuring your summers around being able to, you know, take him to all the different ballparks all around Ontario where he's going to be going and following him around?
Yeah, I'd like romance of that.
Oh, definitely. We actually split our time because our younger son's in baseball too, and he was the coach of the Ken was the coach of the of Tristan's team. So I'd always go adult, and he'd always go with Tristan. So it was split time. But yeah, we put a lot of miles on the car. And usually speeding to get there because we're usually running late. And you have to be there on time, or if you're not on there, the coach makes you run or sits you out. And Dalton used to get stressed over that.
Yes.
He hated being late, so we were always trying to get there on time. And sometimes you're just stuck in traffic and you can't, you know. And just I remember a few times we have to stop at the side of the road, and he'd be anxious. So it was one of those interesting road trips. But yeah, we've been all over the States, like lots of driving, lots.
Are there any destinations, any places that he played? And I'll ask you this in a second, Dalton. But any places that were, you know, particularly memorable?
I remember when he hit his first home run was in Michigan. We were in the Michigan tournament in... when we were playing with the Oakville Royals. That was always good. It was like, wasn't sure if it was over, and he was sprinting like it wasn't over, and then the coach is like, yeah, it's over, and we're like, it's over? Like, because it was been quite a while. Like, he's done some in-the-park home runs when he was younger, but that was his first really home run. So that was memorable for me, for sure.
And for me, it would have been the tournament that they went to and played all those U.S. teams. What was that? Oh, do you remember? Those U.S. teams when they're, I think, 9, 10?
Oh, Cooperstown.
Cooperstown, yes. That was memorable for me for his brother because I was head coach there. Did you go to Cooperstown,
yeah.
Dalton? Mom, so you may want to talk about that experience because I didn't go to Cooperstown with Dalton.
Yeah, I
went. Val went. So you may want to talk about that.
Yeah, that was an experience. Dalton got to... run. They do like individual sports, and he was picked to run for his team. And there were some big boys. Like, Dalton didn't grow until he was later in life. Like, he just started growing at 17. Really, like, he thought he was going to stay 5'9 forever. And then he just kind of spurted up. But when we were there, he was kind of like the smaller out of the boys because there were some big boys. And he's like, I'm going to get smoked. But he didn't. He held his own, and he did really well. He didn't place by any means because the way the age groups go, he was the younger of the age groups. But he did really well. And it was, as I don't know if you know Cooperstown, but that's an experience on its own just to go there and play all the different teams. And I think our team did really well, though. We were with the Tigers at the time, Mississauga Tigers.
And Dalton, what any trips or any you know destinations really stand out for you?
I think for me, not so much playing wise, but it was when I went with the Ontario Blue Jays. We went to Cocoa Beach for a spring break, and I was younger. I might have been 12, around 12, and I was going with guys who were in, you know, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. So it was a real eye opener to see. You know, the difference in experience and physicality and, you know, overall talent, you know, from where I'm going when I'm in grade 7 to these guys that are, you know, 3, 4, 5 years older than me. So I didn't play that much. I think I played one game, one inning defensively, and, you know, that was just, I feel like, a pity thing, you know, just because he felt bad for me. But it was good to see, like, the work that they put in because I thought, you know, I worked hard, but all these kids were working hard. That was my first exposure to seeing scouts and stuff like that. And we actually took a trip down to Tampa, and we watched a spring training game that the Yankees had in Tampa. And, you know, it's exciting for me to look back on it because if I'm in Dunedin next year, I'm going to play in that stadium. So, you know, it was a real eye-opener for me, and I really appreciated that trip a lot. Not so much experiencing it through me playing, but just watching and learning from that.
Now, as you're getting into high school, I'm sure, you know, playing at a high level, especially the way things are, there are going to be scouts coming out. So when did you really start to notice the scouts and start talking with the scouts?
I would say not to my grade 12 year. It was kind of late. most guys, you know, get looked at when they're in grade 10 or 11, and for me it was later because I didn't bloom so early. I was kind of a late bloomer, so I always knew I had a skill. The team I played for, we didn't really get that much exposure. So one of the coaches, he had, you know, he knew some people, and he got me to go to a MLB tryout camp. And then from there, that was my first, like, real exposure for myself playing and showing off my skills in front of scouts. And, you know, I did really well. And, you know, I competed with all the guys that were around my age and on Team Canada and stuff. And then, you know, that was really the biggest moment of my baseball career, because that's what ended up getting me drafted in the long run, so...
Now, did you play with the junior national team?
Yeah.
And, I mean, obviously, as parents, it must have been a, you know, proud moment, you know, your son's playing for Team Canada. What was that like?
I'll let Mom talk to this. It was just to get there was a bit of a experience. Did you want to talk to him?
You mean when we went to the...
No, the yeah, because you went to the tryout with him.
Oh, yeah, it was Dalton just commenting on what Dalton went to the tryout. One of the coaches got us there. And there was a lot of back and forth because nobody's ever really seen Dalton. There was a couple of scouts that said that they were looking at him prior to, like, the Brewers and the Oakland A's. And... I think when we went to that scouting, he hit well. Everything came together, and the fastest guy there, he beat. And I think that was an eye opener. And they actually made them run three times against each other, just the two boys, because they thought, oh. And then all the parents were coming to me and were like, "Is that Dalton? Is that Dalton out there? Was that Dalton?" And I'm like, "Yeah." Like, I was like, and then when he was going by me, he just had this big grin from ear to ear. So I knew, yes, good.
But Dalton was a boy ever since he was seven. He always liked, rather than dominating someone, he would prefer to let him win, let the other guy win. It was an experience that I had with him when he was seven, where he kept letting this other boy win at York, and they were running together. I knew Dalton was faster. I didn't understand why he kept letting this guy win, and I got upset. I kind of showed my disappointment. I spoke to him. And then this was about a few months before I got really upset. And I said, "Listen, you can run faster than him. Run your fastest." And he did. And he beat him. And then they raced again. And he beat him again. I just wanted to point out to him, you do that naturally. He just didn't want to beat this guy because they were friends. And, you know, I feel that the same thing may have happened when he was racing against the other guy that was on the Canadian team. This guy and Dalton, they played on the same team. And they were friends. They weren't, like, real close, but they were friends. And Dalton dominated that race, apparently, from what I've heard. And sure enough, I believe he now has the killer instincts, you know, because he realizes that that's what it takes to win. In order to win, you can't just give it away. You have to do your best. And now I believe he's doing his best. He's training hard all by himself. I'm not pushing him anymore. He's pushing himself. So all of that tutelage, I feel, is finally paying off.
Well, I think, you know, from what I know about baseball in the minor leagues, it's competitive, but it's also very, very cutthroat in some ways. You're not going to do anything to keep someone else down, but everybody's competing for the same number of spots, and there's only so many to go around. There's only so many people that a team can keep on the roster. And, my question is, has this killer instinct lesson, do you feel like it's helped prepare you for the minor leagues a little more?
Well, I wouldn't call it killer instinct, but I would say that it's more of a focus on what I need to do to be successful and use that to my advantage, you know? Like, of course I have friends, you know, in the organization and other organizations, you know, and I want them to do well just like I want to do well. But at the end of the day, you know, they could say the same thing. It comes down to, you know, you and what you need to do to get to the major leagues, you know? So you need to separate yourself by whatever means necessary. So I'm not going to, you know, put someone down by any means, but I'm just gonna, you know, try to outwork them, try to, you know, do things that they don't do that, you know, other people see that I can do. you know? And it's you're constantly showing yourself off because there's, you know, the organization you play for plus 29 other ones. So it's a constant showcase. Even though the showcases are over from high school, it's still a showcase now. So,
and let's talk about getting into that showcase. When you were drafted, where were you? Were you with your parents? Were you with your family? Or, you know, how did you all sort of get that news and find out?
Well, we were downstairs listening on the computer, Mom and I, and Val and I, and Dalton, I believe he was upstairs. He was in the basement. He was in the basement.
With his brother.
And, you know, we waited and we waited, and we thought by the 14th round this may not happen. And the next round, which was the 15th, it did happen. I'm sorry?
16th.
Was it 16th? 16th. So it was the 15th, it didn't happen. And that's when we thought, no, maybe it's not going to happen. And it was the Milwaukee Brewers who we thought was going to pick them because they were the most aggressive. Out of, I think it was about 13 to 15 teams that we had met. And it was Milwaukee who seemed to be the most interested. It was a surprise to us when Toronto was the ones who called them in the 16th round. But we were happy. It was a happy time for us.
Well, I'm sure growing up in Toronto, it's always, you know, if anybody drafted you, you know, Toronto would probably be the team you were obviously most familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you would have been happy to go anywhere.
Yeah.
But it makes it a little bit more special. In addition to, you know, just the feeling, like, was there this feeling within the family, like, that, you know, this was all worth it, this is all, you know, it's, you know, paying off in terms of all that effort has been rewarded by, you know, this sort of almost universal acceptance that he is as good as he is?
Yeah, but it wasn't our goal. It wasn't our goal to make the major leagues because we didn't think that was even possible. Our goal was to get him into university with an academic and an athletic scholarship. His mother continually worked on with him every night with homework and with his education. And his goal was to achieve 80 in all of his courses for 4 years. My goal was to make him the best athlete he could be so we could get that athletic scholarship. And we were able to achieve both the academic and the athletic scholarship. That was our goal. The Canadian national team, to me, that was gravy. And then the major league, that was icing on the cake. But our goal was to get him a full scholarship, which we did at University of St. Francis in Indiana. And that was a very exciting time for us as well.
Now, when that happens, you know, you're probably 18 years old when you're drafted, and you 17, and you had, you know, you'd committed to going, I'm sure you'd committed at
yes.
that point to University of St. Francis. How much of a decision was it at that point where I'm sure Mom had some, you know, academic inclinations as well, and for you as well, I'm sure you may have, you know, you can tell me, you know, what you were thinking about the opportunity to go to a college in the States to study and both study and play baseball.
Well, I think, like my dad said, it was all about, you know, going to school. Like, I was geared in my mind towards going to school and, you know, getting an education, playing baseball, that whole experience. Once I got on the national team, it was kind of just like, it was a great opportunity for one, but I was just excited to be there, you know. Just I was with the best players in Canada that were my age and whatnot, so got to go to Florida, play against pro teams. And then when I started competing in those games, and I realized that I was pretty similar to them, you know. All I didn't have was as much experience, you know, but I didn't feel out of place. And then we also went to the Dominican, and I really held my own there. So I kind of felt like that was definitely a possibility for me to play professional baseball. I knew that I would most likely get drafted. It was just, you know, when, you know, because I came on so late that, you know, scouts didn't really have a track record on me, and they're kind of timid on taking me. But, you know, Jamie Lehman, he was really high on me, and then when they picked me, it was really exciting, you know, really exciting moment. And then from probably that moment, I just said, you know, if the Blue Jays could give me enough money to give me an opportunity to play, and then I would take it, you know, because it would be worth my while, because all I need is one opportunity, you know, and I think to this point I've been making the most of it, so.
And what was your reaction to the same situation, to, you know, the choice between college and playing professionally?
Well, we did get some money from the Blue Jays to set aside for college in case he gets hurt, or what if he doesn't like it, he doesn't want to stay, and they would pay for his education. So we figured, even if he went 5 years in the minor leagues, he's still young enough to go back to college. Give him the opportunity. He's worked. He did all the work. We just put it in front of him. You know, of course, we paid for it, but he did all the work. And give him the opportunity. And that's where we came down to it. As long as the money was set aside for him, that if something ever happened, he could go back to school and it would be paid for.
Now, when you got into the Blue Jays system, did anything sort of really surprise you that you may not have anticipated, or did you have a good idea from the playing with the national team of what was in store?
I think it was the amount of guys that were there. It's kind of a shock, you know. And just I was used to playing into the extended spring training team or the instruction league, so I only seen about 50 guys. So I thought, okay, that's as many as there is. Like, it's not that bad. And then spring training would roll around, and there were so many guys. You know, you feel like you don't get noticed, like you just get lost in the shuffle. So that's, from that point, I realized, you know, it's all about you. So you got to do what you need to do. And then that's kind of where I started to work more individually. You know, I really depended on coaches when I was younger, and also on myself to do stuff when they weren't there. But then once you get to pro ball, it's kind of like, you know, you are your franchise in a way. So you have to market it. You have to put the time in, the work in, and that's something that they don't tell you at first, you know. And how cutthroat it can be sometimes, you know. Like, it's a business now, I understand. But back then I was seeing guys, you know, get released and stuff. And it was a real eye-opener. And you know, you have that dream, and then the dream could just end, you know, within an instant, so.
And was there anything that you did or had wished you could do to help prepare him for that? It's, as he said, it is a business, and it's a very different world, I think, than even elite level amateur athletics.
It would be difficult to prepare him for what he's going through. The best way to prepare him for it is to support him while he's going through it, and that's what we continue to do.
So just be there for him.
Absolutely.
I think the hardest part for me was when, because he was 17 and he was going down by himself with 25 year olds and doing stuff, you know, because they have off time. And I was more concerned with the off time than on time. When in the field, I was more concerned he was going to get himself into trouble or follow somebody in the wrong direction, and then you never know. So, but no, he's been good. He's been holding his own. He's very focused when he's down there, and, you know.
No, and I think he's still, because he got drafted early, he left home at 17. He was still a young guy who counted on his parents to always be there. So if something was happening, mom would usually be the one who would reach out to him and talk to him, or he would reach out to her. And that continues to this day, you know. So like I said, we're here now more for support and hoping that he makes all the right decisions. But it's got to be his decisions now. I mean, he's 21 now. You know, there comes a time when you have to say, do what you think is right. And then we support whatever his decision is, or we give him pointers as to whether or not that was the right decision or maybe not so good of a decision. So that's what we're here for.
I remember when he was 17 and a scout, I think it was, what's the major league scout's name?
Which team?
The Oliver. Walt Burrows asked me, when we were down in spring training, he goes, so what do? Talk to Dalton like once a week? And I said, once a week? I need a text every day to make sure he's okay. See, like, I think they forget that 17, you know, to me, he's still my baby. So I need to know every day he's okay. Even if he just says, hi, Mom, I'm okay. I'm good with that. But now it's a little easier. I can let him go for a couple of days.
Well, you know, I can tell you from my experience, my mom is the same way, and I'm, you know, in my mid-30s, and I lived in Germany for a year, and she would, you know, if she didn't hear from me for a couple of days, she would be like, what's going on? It's definitely, I think it's definitely a universal concern. And, you know, when you were down there in your first year, you know, as a 17, 18-year-old, you know, did you ever feel there were times that, you know, you really needed to reach out to your parents or to your support network just, you know, to talk things out or just to talk about things?
Yeah, I think that was the 1 year that I needed them the most, you know, just because it was a new environment for me. And, you know, like they said, I was young and I hadn't been away from home for that long of a period of time. I always wanted that independence, you know, like I feel like any kid does. But once you go there and it's kind of a grown-up environment, and I was still a kid, it was definitely a lot, and I had to depend on them, and I still do, you know, when things are going good or bad, and I still, you know, lean back on them for support, and they're always there for me. So
I'm sure you see this with you know, some of your teammates, whether they're younger, whether they're older. I don't think it matters all that much, but I'm sure you've seen some teammates who don't necessarily have this kind of support network for them. And, you know, do you think that it gives you an advantage?
I'd say so, because you always have that outlet to go to when you need help. You know, like those players that don't have that, they have to rely on themselves or maybe their friends or something like that. But, you know, the family's always there. They're always going to be there. So I think that's definitely an advantage in its own way. But I know there's people that don't have their parents and they're still, you know, doing well for themselves. So,
and I know a couple of years ago, 2012, you spent a lot of the time hurt. And it's one of those things where, you know, again, you're not able to do what you want to do, and you're not, you know, able to get up there and do it. Were your parents, you know, especially important for helping you get through that, with, you know, and keeping your state of mind, your frame of mind in a positive place?
Yeah, just talking to me and staying positive and stuff, because, you know, when you get hurt, you know, you get negative thoughts, like, what if, you know, so-and-so happens. But, you know, I'd call them, and they'd be, they tell me nothing but positive things, you know, stuff that I would, you know, want to hear. So, you know, going through an injury like that, I had broken both my hamstrings. So once I went through it the first time, I didn't really know how to handle it. So I really depended on them a lot. And then the second time it happened, I kind of knew from experience what was going to happen. So, but, you know, injuries happen and stuff like that. So, you know, you just got to deal with it. And then they helped me deal with it.
And this year, he was a little bit closer to home. He was playing out of Lansing, and I know you guys came down fairly frequently. And what was it like to be able to go watch your son playing in a nice ballpark, in a very competitive league down there in the Midwest League? What was it, you know, to be able to go down and see Dalton play?
Well, it's great, you know, considering that he wasn't in as far away as Dunedin, where we'd have to fly there. We could just, you know, finish the day at work and then drive down. That was great. To be able to then spend time with him after the game, and occasionally spend a day together if he wasn't playing that day or whatever. So no, it was good. It was good.
Yeah, it was definitely. We tried to go almost every weekend, every other weekend if we could. If Tristan wasn't playing, we'd try to go down. One of us at least would try to go down, because we got a good rate at the Lexington, like $69, so it was definitely worth it. I mean, for 3 years we really didn't get to see him play a lot, especially we were concerned with Vancouver. When he went to Vancouver, we were thinking maybe once a year, because just to fly out there was a lot. But then he broke his hammy bone and he ended up coming back, so it was all good. It was great seeing him play. His brother got to see him his first Grand Slam. His brother texts me right away. He goes, "Dalt just hit your Grand Slam." And I was listening to it, and I was like, and the commentator was saying, "Dalt just hit it. Went over. Grand Slam." I'm like, "What?" And right away text, "Dalt just hit a bullet over the fence." So it was pretty cool. At least one of a family member was there, and it was good. He had some bonding time with his brother. He stayed a whole week with him, so it was good.
And is there some kind of pressure to keep playing even though you're hurt? And I know you had some injury issues this year, and you still played and you still performed really well. So, like, my question is, like, do you feel that pressure? And are you still trying to find the line between what you can play through and what you can't?
Well, a couple of times I was hurt this past season, you know, I hated sitting on the bench. Like, I'd call my parents to tell them, like, I just want to play so bad because I couldn't stand sitting on the bench every single game coaching first base. Like, that's not where I want to be. I want to be on the field, right? So that really pushed me to come back faster, even though I might not have been ready. You know, I was playing through some stuff. But, I mean, everybody, you know, was playing injured by July, August. So everybody's got nagging stuff. So, you know, just tape it up and suck it up and just go out there and play. And then I wouldn't say that there's pressure to it. It's just, you know, I mean, there's other guys who get opportunity from you not playing. But I think whenever you're ready to come back is when you should come back. If you feel like you can play through it, play through it. You know? But if it's something that's going to deter your performance, then I probably wouldn't.
You know what? I believe if you're doing something you love to do, you'll play through anything. And, you know, the baseball players or athletes are fortunate to be doing something that they are passionate about. So I think that's where their wall isn't, not where our wall would be. For us, it would be just pleasure. If we sprained a finger, well, you know what? We're not playing at all. We're done. But if they sprain a finger, they're playing that game and the game after. But because they love doing what they're doing, I so believe in continue to pursue what you love to do. That way, you'll make the most out of it. You'll be the best you can be, and he's doing just that.
But all the coaching staffs are very, they come talk to you when you're down there in spring training, and they all like Dahl. They all tell me, I remember this one coach, Anthony.
He's with the Cubs now.
Yeah. He came to me the first day, he goes, oh, you must be Pompey's mom. I don't know how he knew, but he knew. And he said, your son is great on and off the field. He goes, I always remember this, because he says, we draft talent, we don't draft personalities. And he goes, I wish all the kids here had Dalton's personality. So that goes a long way, that's other than baseball skills. So that was good.
So I don't want to keep you any longer, but if you have anything you want to share with the listeners about Dalton. Dalton, if you have anything you want to share with the listeners about your parents.
My thought is that we're going into our fifth year, and it continues. You know, this year we're looking forward to. Last year was quite the accomplishment, you know, and to me the biggest thing was being awarded the Gold Glove. That natural talent that he has of being a great fielder. And even when he was injured, I said to him, no matter what, you don't even have to think about your fielding. That's there automatically. And, you know, it's great when the organization of baseball, they agree with me. You know, that to me was a big thing. And now we have a new year, so not going to look back on last year. We're looking forward on this year as to what we can accomplish this year. So that's our goal.
Yeah, I think too, physically, I've been working on, you know, baseball stuff, running, all that stuff. I can do that myself. But when it comes down to mentally, you know, having my parents there is really key and has been really key in my success, because without them, I probably wouldn't have made it through certain stretches of time, you know, when I was playing. And, you know, they don't play the game. They don't, you know, put on the gloves or the cleats and go out there like I do. But they are in my mind, you know, because I listen to what they say, and then what they say always helps me in the end, even if I might not agree with it right away. So I'm really appreciative to that. And I know they'll keep supporting me as long as I play and whatever else I do in life.
And on that sentiment, we come to the end of this episode of the Blue Jays from Away podcast. We'll see you next time. And until then, go Jays, go.